Kof Ches Teves, Monday the 19th of January, Rabbi Rashi Simon, Sinners and Saints, What Makes Them Tick?
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here once again. The subject we've chosen this morning, I think, is an interesting one. And I don't know whether you think it's interesting or just happen to be here anyway, so therefore you're listening. But in any case, we have in Parshas Bo a further development or a further description of the character of one of the great villains of the Torah, of Paro. And there is a subtle but a very keen insight into the nature of villainy. The Parsha begins, Keni chvadati eslibo veslev avadav. Hashem says to Moshe, Paro, because I have hardened his heart and that of his subjects, so that I will have a chance to place these signs in his midst. Now, according to that, which we already understand from previously, Paro is not going to let them go. He's not going to succumb to the pressure. He's not going to respond favorably to Moshe's demands. And this has already been foretold at the very beginning of Moshe's mission, back in Parshas Shmos, when Moshe first sets out, having been ultimately persuaded to take on the mantle of leadership, Hashem tells him, Hini anochi horegas bincha b'chorecha. That is when Moshe is on his way with Zipporah, and you know, just before the incident with the bris, whatever the significance of that may be, Hashem already tells him that you're going to say to Paro, I'm going to kill your firstborn. And Rashi says that already foreshadows the last and climactic of the 10 plagues. And according to that, Moshe himself also knew from the start that Paro would not allow them to go. He would not send them out ultimately until the last Makkah of Makkas Bechoros. And according to that, we have to wonder, why does Moshe still like prod Paro time after time? And especially, he says the following words. He says, Ad masai me anta leanos mi panai. Now that seems to be taking the game a bit too far. Each time Moshe says, Shlachata mi, send them out, and Paro first says no, and then he says he will, and then he changes his mind. And this pattern repeats itself again and again. But why does Moshe say, Ad masai me anta leanos mi panai? How long will you refuse to humble yourself to me? Ultimately, why does Moshe speak to Paro about humbling himself? Why doesn't Moshe just emphasize, we're here for practical reasons. I'm here to insist that you release the Jewish people from your servitude. Why talk about character and a sort of attitude? How long will you refuse, Ad masai me anta leanos mi panai? How long will you refuse to humble yourself? Forget humility. Just get on with the job. Just do what I'm asking you to do, and then, we're satisfied. But it seems that Moshe is prodding Paro for something further. There's another short phrase as well, which is the key to understanding the approach of the Sfas Emes that I'd like to share with you. It says, "Vachazek Hashem es leiv Paro lo ava leshalcham," that Hashem hardened the heart of Paro, which we've had many times already. And then the Torah adds, "Lo ava leshalcham." What does that mean? Lo ava leshalcham. He didn't want to send them. Again, why the reference to whether he wanted to send them or he didn't want to send them? He didn't send them. That's the main thing. He didn't want to send them. But my friends, there is here a subtlety which is very important. Because really, we are dancing around the problem, the philosophical problem, which the Ramban mentions, which the Rambam mentions as well, and others too. The philosophical conundrum of how Hashem can punish Paro and condemn Paro when it says that Hashem will harden his heart. If he has lost his free will, then how is it fair to punish him? I'm not going to address that problem directly. The Mefarshim speak about it. But if Paro's heart is hardened, either because he did it or because Hashem did it, then why talk about lo avala shacham? Of course he didn't want to send them. If he wanted to send them, he would have sent them. Of course he doesn't want to send them. His heart has been hardened, whether he has done it himself or Hashem has done it. What we have here is a subtlety. Paro wouldn't send them, and he refuses to send them, and Hashem is preventing him even from sending them, even if he wanted to. What Moshe is saying to Paro is, why don't you even want to send them? It may be the case that you are addicted to your megalomania, and you are so full of your own power and your own prestige that it's beneath you to succumb to the pressure of a higher authority. And therefore you won't send them even to your own detriment. But what is your feeling about that? It's what the Zohar calls in another context, Rava de Rava. It's the attitude towards your inability. The Sfasemes says, therefore, Hashem hardened his heart. So of course he's not going to succumb, he's not going to humble himself, because Hashem has hardened his heart and prevented him from doing so. He says, he should have wanted to humble himself. But actually, Paro himself was happy that he wasn't sending them. It's like a person who is addicted to smoking or to alcohol or to internet abuse, as we call it euphemistically, or to gambling or to other kinds of self-destructive behavior. And he can't escape from his own circumstances. But what is his attitude about it? Is he contented, or does he wish that he could kick the habit? This is what the Torah is hinting to here. Lo avala shalcham, he didn't send them, and he didn't even want to send them. He didn't regret that he couldn't send them. Hashem hardened his heart, and he became a puppet on the string. And therefore, he didn't even have the ability to send them, even if he wanted to. But you know what? He didn't even want to. This is the characterization. This is the sort of extreme paradigm of the villainy and the wickedness of Paro. And this is why Paro emerges as one of the great villains of Jewish history, of history itself, because he symbolizes the rebel who does not succumb to the divine will, and he doesn't even want to. His attitude towards it, he doesn't even want to. You know, this same idea exists Letzad HaTov as well. Like a person who, I'll give you the example of the story supposedly true of the Israeli soldiers who were there at the time of the, we call reunification of Jerusalem. They said, HaKotel B'yadeinu. And it was a time of a historic ecstasy. And for the soldiers who were there at that time, many of them were overcome with emotion to be standing before the Kotel, which is in Jewish hands after 1900 years. And some of them, those of more religious inclination, were actually overcome with emotion and were crying because they couldn't believe that they were zoche to be the ones to liberate the Kotel. And they say that there were two kibbutznikim there. And they looked around at their battle-hardened comrades who were overcome with emotion. And for them it meant nothing. It was just an old wall. Just a pile of ancient stones. And, you know, they were kind of almost embarrassed to see the way the other soldiers were so emotional. And one of them turned to the other and he saw that the other fellow started to cry. And he said to him, Yossi, lama ta boche? You're a kibbutznik like me, you know, it doesn't mean anything, does? He says, you're right. Aval ani boche al sha'ani lo boche. I'm crying because I'm not crying. Because I see that these other comrades who are just as tough guys as we are, and they're the same soldiers that we are, and the same background that we have, but they have an appreciation for what this means, and therefore it must be something so profound. There must be a meaning here that I don't even grasp, and for that I cry. So he didn't know what the kotel represented, but he saw that it represents something, and he regretted that he doesn't have that appreciation. This is the second degree. It's the Rava de Rava. And this is the villainy of Paro. Lo avala shalcham. He didn't send them and he didn't even want to send them. And that's why Moshe said to him, Admasame anta anos mi panai. At least show some regret. You don't seem to be struggling. It's like the Tzadik Nister who deceives the Yitzhahara by giving in without a fight. You know, this is the, that's supposed to be a joke. He's not really a tzaddik at all, but he just, immediately doesn't even struggle. Paro doesn't even struggle. Paro is quite happy with his circumstance of being the one to retain in his control over Klal Yisrael, even in the face of the most extreme pressure and even in the face of the evidence of the divine authority. This is Admaseme Antaleanos Mi Panai. That's what I have to tell you about the sinners. I want to tell you about the saints now a little bit. In our parsha, we have an extended series of mitzvahs about Korban Pesach. And really, this is the first parsha in the Torah that has a substantial number of mitzvahs. And Sefer HaChinuch has a classic treatment of the subject. It's a theme that he refers to elsewhere in his Perush, but the most extensive treatment is here in our parsha, in one of the mitzvahs of Korban Pesach, Shelo Lishbor Etzem Min HaPesach. One of the many mitzvahs relating to the Korban Pesach itself, not to break a bone of the Korban Pesach. Now, Sefer HaChinuch, we've all heard of it, maybe go to Minchas Chinuch Shior. I know Rabbi Stern has excelled in that. He used to give in Sasev in the olden days, Shior Minchas Chinuch, perhaps he still does here as well. But the Sefer HaChinuch, even if you don't go into the profound lumdas of the Minchas Chinuch Babad, but just to read it, it's a pleasure to read. If you want some leisure reading one time that you'll feel good about, open up the Sefer HaChinuch. Because it's written in a beautiful style, especially when he speaks about Sharshei HaMitzvah, the reason for the mitzvah, the background to the mitzvah. And you know, the Sefer HaChinuch was written apparently as a bar mitzvah gift for his boy. The author of Sefer HaChinuch, we don't really who wrote it. It's attributed to Rav Aaron Halevi of Barcelona, the Ra'ah. But it definitely was not written by him. Too many proofs that it wasn't. Some want to say it was written by his brother, possibly. Or maybe by someone else of the same name who lived in Barcelona at the same time. But he gave to his son this bar mitzvah gift. History does not record what the young man was hoping for, maybe an Xbox or something. We don't know for sure. But this is what he got. And he has bequeathed to Klal Yisrael the most wonderful, insightful, and profound work, which is so compelling and, you know, relatively accessible to the common man like me. And he writes about the purpose of mitzvahs. And he says, you know, we've got Korban Pesach here that has so many different mitzvahs about the menuyah of etzem lo yishburu bo. It has to be eaten roasted, it has to be well done, not medium rare, and so many qualifications that attach to it. And he says, uvechol shana v'shana ba'oso hazman ru'ui lanu la'asos ma'asim hamar'in banu hama'ala ha'gedola sha'aleinu ba'osa sha'a. He says, every year we have to do certain things to recall, to bring to mind, to in a way reenact what happened at that time of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And through repeating year after year these actions that bring to mind and in a way replicate the experience of Yetzias Mitzrayim, so the subject, the memory is ingrained within us. And even though we no longer have the Korban Pesach, Bisman Hazeh, as you know, we have the Haggadah, we've got the Seder Leil Pesach, we still do many things, and that's an important central theme of the Pesach experience, is the reenactment. And he says here, a yesod of behavioral psychology, he doesn't call it that, but that's what it is. He says, "Va'al tachshov b'ni letfos al dvarai." Don't think that you would like to criticized me in the following way. V'lamar, Lami Yitzaveh Osana Hashem Yitzbarach Lasos Kol Eilat Zichron Osanez. Why do we have to do so many different things to remember this miracle? Halo B'Zichron Echad Yale Hadavar Machshor Seinu. It would be sufficient with one act of memory. Eat a piece of matzah. And Zeo Maspik. Why do we have to have all of the various additional qualifications? And even, as I say, we don't have Korban Pesach, but we eat the matzah, have to eat a certain amount within a certain time. We have to recline in a particular posture, and you have to eat it with a certain kavana. And of course, we've got the moror and other things as well. I'm just elaborating a bit more because we don't have Korban Pesach any longer. But why does the Torah describe and demand so many different acts of remembrance? It would be sufficient. He says, Ki lo mi chachma hitafsani al zeh.
Very good.
Machsheva sanor yesiach al adavar ledaber kein. And he adds on, very good for teachers, and it's the impetuosity of youth that has lent you to ask that way. It's the naivete of youth which leads you to ask that way. That's why I say, you see, he wrote it for his bar mitzvah boy. Va'ata b'ni im bina shama zos v'hatei az lachau shma. Listen up, I want to tell you. Da, and here is where he says the important words, and if you remember one phrase from this year, which you may already know, this is the phrase to bear in mind. V'dakia adam nif'al kafi pu'ulosav. A person acts in accordance with his behavior. A person is motivated. A person acquires the character and the habits that are ingrained in him through repetition, through the behavior that he does. That's how a person is motivated. Whether for good, or as we say, or for better. In accordance with a person's habits, that will shape his character. And he says, even a person who's a Rasha Gomor by nature, he's a scoundrel, and he's arrogant, and he's self-centered, and he's callous. But if that person, by force of circumstances, let's say, or because he's employed to do so, acquires the habit of doing acts of kindness and compassion and caring, and he's required because of force of circumstances to understand this in a sensitive way, the nature of other people, that scoundrel, that varlet, over time will acquire the qualities and he will become the person who is caring and compassionate. And of course it works the other way as well. Ki acharei ha-pu'ulos nimshachim halavavos. Because in accordance with behavior, that's how a person's character is shaped. And he says, even afilim yetzadi gomor levavo yashar v'tamim, even if a person is by nature very upright, chafetz b'torah v'mitzvos, imulai yasar tamim b'dvarim shel dofi, if he, because of whatever the reason, begins to act in a way which is uncaring or nefarious or criminal, kilu tamar derech mashal, if the king employs him or insists that he does a certain job, yeshuv lizman min hazmanim mitzidkas libel yos rasha gamur. This is why I, chas v'shalom, would never like to be employed as a traffic warden, you know, handing out the tickets to unfortunate people. I don't really want to say that those are scoundrels. They're doing the job. They've got to do it. But someone who, you know, spends his entire day bringing grief and anguish to other people, you know, it's not a good profession. I hope we have no traffic wardens here. This is what the Sefer Chinuch says, and this is a yesod of all of the mitzvahs. This idea is found in a number of places, but one place where it is written in an explicit way and then elaborated a little bit further in another source is in the Mishnah Pirkei Avos. This is a very interesting Mishnah, again philosophically, but that's not our subject at the moment. The mission in Pirkei Avos says, "Hakol tzafui b'harishus nisuna." Now, in those few words, we have the paradox of human free will and divine providence and divine foreknowledge. But that's not our subject. I'm interested in the last part of that Mishnah. "V'hakol lefi uvatuv ha'olam nidon, v'hakol lefi rov hamaaseh." Everything is in accordance with the greatness of the deed. Or maybe the abundance of good deeds. And the Rambam explains it in the second way. Hakol lefi rov hamaaseh. And the Rambam in Perush HaMishnayos says that it's better for a person to give he says, 1,000 coins to 1,000 mendicants, more so than to give 1,000 coins, a donation of a great hon rav to a deserving beneficiary. Even though the deserving person who gets 1,000 coins, you know, his life is transformed and his troubles are ended and, you know, he has the funds to do what he needs to do. And it's a great mitzvah. But it says the Rambam, such a person has been inspired. Whatever the reason, the guy, the person is a very gifted fundraiser or something, and he's tugged at the man's heartstrings, and he's written out a big check for a lot of money. But that doesn't change the character of the donor. That doesn't define the nature of the donor. But if a person gives 1,000 coins to 1,000 mendicants, then that person, over time, by the time he gives his 1,000th coin, he will be have been transformed into a generous and benevolent and compassionate person. This is what the Rambam says, and it's recorded also in a more popular source, because Parashat HaMishnah is not easy to read. You know, it was written in Arabic, and it was translated very inconsistently by various different translators, and it was transcribed also in a poor fashion. That's why the Parash HaMishnah of the Ramban, it's printed in the back of the Gemara, but it's not studied that much. Or when you do, it's difficult to read because the Hebrew translation is difficult. It's, more recently, it's been translated again by Rav Yosef Kafach about 40, 50 years ago. I mean, of course, it's quoted frequently, but the Hebrew doesn't flow that well. But it's also recorded the same idea in the Orchos Tzadikim, which is also written anonymously. We don't know the author. And he says very simply, by the way, undervalued book, Orchot Tzadikim. It's very readable, and it's very lucid, and it's very compelling, and it doesn't need my approbation, but I think it's undervalued. He says, V'odon rechachamin zichon avracha, midas hanedivus teluya behergel. The trait of magnanimity is dependent on habit. You've got to give, and you've got to give again and again, and then by so doing, you become a compassionate person. A person is called a nadiv if he gives repeatedly and regularly in accordance with his means. And he goes on in that vein. And this really is just a manifestation of the yesod of the Sefer HaChinuch, that if you want to be a saint, you should act like a saint. And you know what? Over time, you will be transformed. You'll become that person. The same idea is found also in Mesillas Yesharim. He says the same idea in a slightly more elegant way even. He says, V'omnam kvar yadate shani utse Yosef avodas habori yisvach shemohu chefetz haleib uchukas haneshama. The most preferred feature of divine service is desire of the heart and longing of the soul. Just like we said about Paro, the opposite, that he didn't do the right thing and he didn't even want to do the right thing. Says the Smil Sesharim, the greatness that to which a person should aspire is the longing of the heart, that he should have the desire, he should be motivated, he should yearn for closeness to Hashem. And he quotes the psukim, Ka'aryal tarog alafike mayim, ken nafshi tarog elecha elokim, a beautiful pasuk, tzama nafshi lelokim, nichsefa v'gam kalsa nafshi lechatzos Hashem, these beautiful psukim, which have been put to music as well, tzama nafshi lecha, kama lecha v'sari, my soul, my heart yearns for dveikus b'Hashem. But Mesillas Yesharim is also a practical person, very practical. You won't use a makubal, but he has a practical streak. And that's why the Sefer Mesillas Yesharim, more so than the Ramchal's other books, is so valuable and so compelling. He says, because even though the ikar is that which is within, but how do you acquire that? How do you acquire that inner longing? Ki atnu hachitzonis moreres hapenimis. The chitzonius is ma'ora the penimius. That which is on the surface, that which is just tangible, that which is practical, little by little inspires the character and the nature of the person. Ubevadai, shiyosir masura biyodahu achitzonius ma'penimius. A person is more easily capable of moderating and determining his outward behavior than his inner emotions. But if a person utilizes that which is within his control, Yikne gama she'enu b'yado behemsheich. So even that which is beyond his control, little by little, he will acquire it, and he will become the master of it. And he will acquire that ultimate devotion to Hashem and attachment to that which is the right thing. There's a well-known story of the Talmud, or an admirer of the Chafetz Chaim, who approached him with advice for a job. He said, "I've been offered a position in a bank." And in those days, the Russian banks apparently had great bureaucracy, and they had one window for withdrawals and another window for deposits. And he said, "I've been given a choice. I've been offered a position in a bank, whether I want to work in withdrawals or deposits. And which one should I do? Is there any difference? Is there any Jewish perspective, any preference for it?" So the Chafetz Chaim said, "Absolutely." He said, "If you have a choice," he said, "it's much better for you to work in withdrawals than in deposits. Because if you work in withdrawals, then you spend your whole day sitting behind a screen and giving money to clients. And if you work in deposits, then you're taking money the whole day. So even though it's not your money, it's not the bank's money, it may not even be the client's money, who knows whose money it is. But you're in the habituating yourself to taking money all the time if you're in deposits. If you're in withdrawals, you acquire the habit of giving, of giving, of giving." And this is the same idea that we've seen in the Sefer HaChinuch. I just want to maybe give... just to say that this is what I like to call the fallacy of the cardiac Jew, of the person who says, "You know, I'm a good Jew in my heart. I've got a good Jewish heart." But that person maybe doesn't do mitzvahs, doesn't do chesed or tzedakah, doesn't keep mitzvahs in the proper way. But, you know, I've got a Jewish heart. One meets a lot of people like that. I like to call it the fallacy of the cardiac Jew. You know, have you ever heard someone says, "In my heart, I'm a master plumber. You know, I don't know how to hold a wrench, but in my heart, I'm very gifted." It's ridiculous. It's only meaningful if it finds reflection in behavior in the real world. Just maybe end with one last little story so you can remember one message and one story. I heard this from a friend of mine. Supposedly it's true. He has a friend who's an actor, not an A-list actor, more like a C or D-list actor. And he was an extra in a film that they were shooting in Brooklyn years ago. And they were in Bensonhurst, actually, which is an area, an Italian neighborhood in Brooklyn. And it was a film that was set in Brooklyn as well, and there were Hasidim in the film. And this actor was dressed as a Hasid, therefore. He was just an extra. They had a scene of a tish or something. They needed 100 Hasidim, so he was dressed. Anyway, they took a break for lunch, and everybody went off to get something to eat. So he wandered down the road into an Italian deli, and he ordered a ham on rye. And the proprietor looked at him, you know, a fellow dressed as a Hasid there in Brooklyn, and he said, "What do you want?" He said, "A ham on rye." He said, "You want a ham on rye? Buddy, if you want to go to hell, you do it on your own. I'm not going to help you." So he realized he was dressed as a Hasid. He said, "No, it's just a costume. I'm not really one of those Hasidim." He said, "Yeah, that's what they all say. Get on your bike." Sometimes the chitzonius is ma'or the pinimius, and in accordance with a person's appearance and behavior and conduct, that defines little by little who he is. Thank you very much.